Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Cameron Haley, driver number 13, with Tay Tundra for Thor Sport Racing and the Camping World Truck Series. You're listening to the Pit Stop Radio with Tim Despain.
Live from Talladega, you're in the Pit Stop with Tim Despain and Stephen Wilson on the Speedway Digest Radio Network, Blog Talk Radio, Stitcher Radio, and your Apple Podcast.
Y'all ready for this?
Good evening from Dega Nation. I'm Tim Despain, alongside my good friend and CEO, SpeedwayDigest.com, Stephen Wilson. Stephen, how you doing, bud?
Well, I'm doing all right, I think. There's this big ball of fire up in the sky down here because it's been raining for so long that I'm not quite sure what it is.
You might want to Google it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I think I was going to take a picture of it and send it out and put it on Facebook and Twitter to figure out what it is.
That sounds good. All right, bud, let's go ahead and bring our Reverend into the show this evening. Let's go ahead and get everything started. Let Reverend Joe get the invocation going on. We're going to bring our Reverend from out there on the West Coast, Mr. Reverend Joe. Where's my button? Here we go. Reverend, how you doing tonight, bud?
I was just going to tell Stephen, don't ask anybody up here in Seattle what that is, because they'll have no clue either. That ball of fire he's talking about, I don't know what that is.
Stephen, any comment on that?
He's not sure either.
All right. Reverend Joe, go ahead. You got the floor, bud. Get the invocation started.
All righty, Lord, we come before you today. We thank you so much for all you do for us, for the breath we breathe, for the air, for the sun, for the rain, for all of it, Lord. Without you, we'd have nothing. So be with us tonight. Guide us through our show. Help us to do a good show tonight. Bless everyone involved with auto racing, all our fans, all those involved, and please watch over our troops and the people who guide them all over this country and all over this world. And we thank you for sending your son, Jesus Christ, to die for our sins so we would have entrance into heaven by believing in him. We thank you. Amen.
Amen.
Oh,
Reverend Joe, as always, great invocation, and thank you for being the official reverend of our show. You got the floor, bud. Let everybody know where they can follow you at on social media and your website.
Thank you. Our website is ontrackwithjesus.org, and my email address is ontrackwithjesus@aol.com. Our phone number is 951-232-7630, and you can follow me on Facebook at Rev Joe Bubico. And also, you can pick me right up on Tim's site, and there's a link there to catch up with us. Glad to talk to you anytime.
Sounds good, Reverend Joe. Thank you very much. You and Miss Betty, y'all have a great Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk with you next week, bud.
All right. Talk to you next week. Stay out of trouble.
Yes, sir, I will. We'll see you, Rev.
All right,
Stephen. That was our good friend, Reverend Joe, up there in Seattle. We got a lot to talk about. Number to call in is 215-383-3681. Our guest at the bottom of the hour, we have crew chief for the number 83, Toyota, Mr. Matt Benedetto, the hope for, I think they got hope for Warriors, something in Cosmo Motors coming up at the bottom of the hour, Mr. Gene Nee. That's going to be something good to talk about. But, Stephen, do you have any breaking news? I seen NASCAR sent out the penalty report warning thing. I hadn't had time to look at it. Is there anything in there?
There is. But the reason why I dropped is my computer decided that it was just going to lock itself up. So all the penalty report and everything that I had up for us to read off and all the nice, cool notes that I had, it's all gone. I'll have to bring it back up here in a minute. I do know somebody in the Xfinity series, a crewman was suspended for a violation of the drug policy in NASCAR. That did come out. There is also some issues on the number 30 and the number 41 over on the Sprint Cup Series side from the All-Star race this past weekend. But like I said, my notes are gone. The computer decided it wanted to go down right in the middle of my conversation talking about the big ball of fire in the sky out here. I guess it didn't like it.
Good Lord, must have. I got it brought up right here, Stephen. You can sort of think it was, this was 519 on opening day inspection at Charlotte. The number 30 got a P3 level penalty. Crew chief has been fined $5,000. If that are refreshing any of your memory, I don't know if that was Cup or what. And then opening day 519.
Yeah.
Okay, Cup. And then the number 41 got a warning for the truck trailing arms did not meet specifications. They got a written warning there. And, you know, we could read off the sections and all that. But, Stephen, let me go ahead and get everything going. The NASCAR Camping World Truck Series was at Charlotte Motor Speedway, race number 6 of the 14th Annual North Carolina Education Lottery 200. And Matt Crafton won that race. Time of the race was 1 hour, 25 minutes, and 1 second. Let's go ahead and NASCAR got 1 second in there. Just like a, well, I ain't going to go there. Average speed was 141.855 miles an hour. Margin of victory was 5.748 miles an hour. Failed to qualify was number 2 of Austin Terry Hope, number 75 of Caleb Holdem, number 30 of Jesse Little, and number 20 of Austin Hill. And let's listen to a little bit about what Matt Crafton had to say in the media center there at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Okay, if we could have your attention, please. We are now joined by the winner of today's North Carolina Education Lottery 200, Matt Crafton, driver of the number 88 Menards Toyota for Thor Sport Racing. Matt now has 13 career wins, and this marks the first time in his career he's won consecutive races. So, Matt, congratulations. Just tell us a little bit about your afternoon.
This thing was unbelievable from the time we dropped the green. I mean, we just made air pressure adjustments. At least that's what I was told. We just made air pressure adjustments. Pretty much after the first lap, I knew that they were going to be in trouble. We had something to contend for a win. And we went through 1, 2, 3, and 4, and I'm like, whew, this thing feels really good unless it really, really falls off or something dramatic happens. I felt that we could battle for a win for sure.
We are also joined by crew chief Carl Joyner Jr. So, Carl, congrats to you. And can you just tell us a little bit about this afternoon's race from your perspective?
It was a lot better than Thursday night's practice. Tell you that. No, it was good. I love it when the sun shines and we all have to lift and craft and can, you know, show everybody's skills. And in our relationship together, tuning it all day. Man, it was a rough one. Our pit stall was terrible because we didn't practice very well the other night. So I think we drove to, what, 8th? And then that first pit stop, we came out 23rd. So he had to do it twice today. He definitely earned his money.
Okay, we'll now open it up for questions for Matt and Carl. If you have a question, please raise your hand, state your name and affiliation. We will get a microphone to you. We'll start over here with Kelly.
Kelly Crandall from PopularSpeed.com. Matt, you seemed a little irritated early in the race with some of the younger drivers. You're kind of upset maybe, I think, with some, I believe it was Cole Custer, just things that were going on. What exactly kind of made you mad and what was going on there?
Does that mean you were listening to that? sorry. I was a little animated. And the problem is, I mean, it's early in the race, and we're racing, and I had some huge runs on people and go to pass them, and literally there's two different times down the back straightaway they drove me from the top of against the wall all the way underneath the white line down the back straightaway. And I'm like, we're 20 laps into this race. I mean, at some point, I mean, you've got to just man up and say, I'm going to get passed right now, and then just go on and maybe race back. But at the same time, that's what takes me off so bad about it. Whenever they, I mean, literally turn left and drive you down to the white line, I don't know what's going to fix the problem. I know what would fix the problem, but I really don't want to do it at a mile-and-a-half racetrack.
Okay, we'll now go upstairs to the press box. Are there any questions from the press box?
Nothing in the press box.
Okay. Any additional questions here in the media center? Okay, we'll take a question from Bob.
Bob Pockers, ESPN. Does it mean anything to win back-to-back races, considering you hadn't done that before in your career?
Oh, yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, it feels very, very good. Somebody brought that to my attention last week after we won Dover, that it's never been done for me. And we won Atlanta last year, and then we were leading on a green-white checkered at Martinsville and lost it, and then we went and won the following one after that. We came close, and it feels very, very sweet to be able to say we've done it back-to-back, so maybe we can go for three.
Any final questions? Okay, get a microphone back here.
Robbie Mays, MRN. Matt, do you feel comfortable now with two wins that you are guaranteed a lock to be in the chase this year?
Yeah, I would say I would definitely feel comfortable there. I didn't completely feel like 100% comfortable when we only had the one, because I truly believe there can be 9-10 different winners in the Camping World Truck Series. The depth of the competition is unreal right now. I mean, it's very, very good, and there's a lot of young talent and a lot of really good trucks, so it should be interesting the next few.
Any final questions for Matt and Carl? Okay. Gentlemen, congratulations. Thanks for coming in. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
And Stephen, Matt brought up a good point there. We're going to take 8 winners, or 8, however, 1, 2, 3, 4 winners. We're going to take 8 people to the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series Championship at Homestead, Miami this year, which you're going to attend. And Matt brought up the point. He's got 2 wins, and we're only a third of the way through, and we've already got – help me out, Stephen. Is it 4 winners?
Yeah, currently we right now we have 4 different winners. Matt Crafton, he has 2 wins right now. You have William Byron with 1, John Hunter Nemechek, he has 1, and Johnny Sauter has 1. So all 4 of them currently with 1. I mean, with wins. I started our way through the season with six starts.
Yeah, and do you think there's going to be 8 different winners, Stephen? You think you're going to have to win a race, or you think maybe somebody can point the way in?
I think this is eventually going to come down to a lot of points, to tell you the truth, because we're already got 4 winners right now. We've discussed this a couple of different times already. We've got 3 races that these guys are going to go to that traditionally are not going to have any other Sprint Cup or Xfinity drivers that are going to be there with him. Eldora is probably going to be one of them. We're also going to have Iowa. We're going to have Gateway. We're also going to have Canadian Tire Motorsports Park. So there's 4 different races right there. Maybe Gateway is a – I mean, I'm sorry, Eldora is probably – You may have one guy that comes and shows up there from the Sprint Cup or Xfinity side, make in and there and jump a win, but that's usually typically not as we've seen in the past. Austin Dillon has won out there in the past. But, you know, we'll have to see how that all plays out at Eudora. But you do have at least three races out there, so that's seven potential spots already locked in at this point. That's considering that from this point on out, that nobody else wins outside of the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series regulars. So I think what this is really going to come down to is once we hit that threshold of eight, it's going to start coming down to, well, Matt Craft, and obviously with his two wins already, he's going to lock himself in just based on his number of wins and then his wins and points at that point. If there's others that have multiple wins, and then from that point on out, it'll be who's highest in the point standings. I think it's going to be really interesting when we get out later on this season with the Camping World Truck Series and just those battles right there, especially right there for 5th, 6th, and 7th. Right now it's being fought. William Byron, Ryan Truex, and John Hunter Nemechek, and two of those three guys already have a win.
Yeah, I would agree too. And, you know, you and I talked about, I think last year, maybe the year before, you know, we were talking about Marina's the chasing the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series. And I really think NASCAR made a good decision on this. And I think it's really going to pay off. I'm really interested in seeing how everything comes down at home to get the name.
Well, you know, I'm still kind of like sitting on the fence on this whole deal. I think what it really, a lot of this comes down to is that last year, both Eric Jones that won the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series and, over in the Chris Buescher in the NASCAR Xfinity Series, and there was such a small margin of points that they both won by. It did come down to the final race there at Homestead. And, you know, I really wasn't seeing a particular need for this at the time, and you know, we really went back to the fact that the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series only had something like 12 or 13 full-time Truck Series regulars that were running week in and week out. You looked over at the Xfinity Series, there were something only like about 18 or so. So, you know, there wasn't full fields out there competing every single week. I think what this has really done is if you take a look at this in general, it's really boosted the competition in the NASCAR Camp World Truck Series and the Xfinity Series side. This year in the Camp World Truck Series side, we have 20 teams at this point in the year that has gone and competed in every single race. And that's not something that haven't seen for many, many years. And I think that's good for the competition. So this has really spurred some competition. And I think NASCAR is really on the right track of getting competition back in the Camp World Truck Series side and not letting it die out for only a handful of teams that we've seen in the past. And, you know, over the Xfinity Series side, we're seeing the same things. We're seeing more full-time teams and not just multi-car teams, but teams from that we've not heard of before, brand new teams coming into the sport that are running, and you know they're building their brand, they're building their drivers, they're building their teams, and they're you know not running as spectacular, running competitively week in and week out, but you know they are there, they are running. They are, making a name for themselves, and they are building the Camping World Truck Series and the Xfinity Series. And for, you know, I think the new chase scenarios have played out in a matter that has allowed this to happen, and I think that's overall good for the sport. And I have to commend NASCAR for, you know, making these changes and making it competitive enough to where teams want to make that investment to come into both of these series, which has obviously been lacking this competition for many, many years.
Yeah, and Stephen, the NASCAR Sprint this weekend for their annual All-Star race. And oh, the tangled web we have woven right there toward the end. You want to go ahead and do a little?
Yeah, well, I'll start with the showdown. Well, with showdown one, segment one, you know, Trevor Bayne, he put one heck of a move to go out there and win that segment one.
He stuck it in a hole, so, didn't he, bud?
Yeah, he did. I give it to him on that. And follow that up by another Roush family driver, Greg Biffle, winning, going out there and winning segment two. And here again in segment three, some days of thunder, beating and banging, tires smoking, door to door, right to the line, Kyle Larson and Chase Elliott beating fenders together. Kyle Larson eventually coming out on top to win segment three. But those two battled very, very hard to go out there and get that win. Chase Elliott would also eventually win the fan vote also and get himself into the NASCAR Sprint All-Star Race, as well as Danica Patrick would later on Saturday night, because unfortunately everything was rained out on Friday and everybody had to run on Saturday along with the Camp World Truck Series. So, well, while that took place in the morning, while we thought that the action was all over with in the morning, we were nowhere even near being done with that. NASCAR. So NASCAR, the drivers, the track, and everybody decided this year they were going to make a few little tweaks to the NASCAR All-Star Race. Well, it hasn't been without its confusion to not only the other drivers, the crews, the media, and others that have been involved into this. Even going into that race, there was a lot of confusion as to, you know, what was going to go on, when it was going to go on, and for an unfortunate matter of the fact, Matt Kenseth went a little too late into segment one to try and make his pit stop. He didn't get to make his green flag mandatory two-tire pit stop in the first segment. He was penalized. He was held a lap, and that's the name of the game. There were other drivers that did come in, and there was a late race caution that sucked Matt Kenseth out there, and NASCAR did penalize Matt Kenseth. They made him sit on pit road and took a lap away from him because of this. But, you know, all in all, it was the name of the game. Unfortunately, also for a couple others out there, Tony Stewart did not get to finish very well in his last All-Star race, finished 20th after a wreck that also involved Matt Kenseth and Case Kane out there. So a few drivers got put out out in the race. But at the end, Joey Logano would run down and win the 32nd annual NASCAR Sprint Cup All-Star Race. This is his first victory in the annual non-points race. This is also Logano's sixth start in the race. His previous best was second, and Brad Keselowski finished second, making it his career best finish, which also matched his 2012 effort. Team Penske finishing 1 and 2. This is the first time they finished 1 and 2 in the annual event. And Dale Earnhardt Jr. finished 3rd, which is his best finish in the All-Star event since 2002.
And Stephen, before we come up here in the bottom of the hour, you know, we've got Gene Need, crew chief for Matt DiBenedetto and BK Racing. Let's listen to a little bit about what Joey Logano had to say in the media center there at Charlotte Motor Speedway.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, if we could have your attention, please. We are now joined by our all-star race-winning crew chief, Todd Gordon, and Team Penske Vice Chairman, Walt Zarnecki. Gentlemen, congratulations on the win tonight. If you could both just tell us a little bit about the race this evening.
I thought it was pretty cool. It's a different format with the 50-50-13, and definitely brought some different strategies forward. I thought a quick synopsis of what we thought, but I thought a long run speed was pretty good in the first section. Second section, the cautions kind of almost seemed like it frustrated us because they didn't let us get to where we were really good. But then the pit crew stepped up and performed in the transition to the 13-lap final segment and got us a little bit there. And then you give Joey Logano four tires and at least eye shot of where the front row is, and he elevates in that final and showed it again tonight.
This is a special night tonight for sure. First of all, to win this race, I know there's a lot of conversation about the format. I think it's fabulous. But having said that, this Shell Pennzoil Ford team has just been so close all season long. Joey's had about 4 or 5 second places and had a little bad luck so far this season, but has been in the thick of it since Daytona. So to get this breakout moment, I think really is significant for the way the team is going to perform for the remainder of the season, particularly beginning next week. But hats off to Todd and to the crew for the strategy and the way they executed. And don't want to forget the teammate, Brad Keselowski. Brad had a great Miller Lite Ford here tonight. So to finish 1-2 is a special night for Team Penske and for our partners at Ford. Thank you.
Okay, we'll now open it up for questions. If you have a question, please raise your hand. We'll get a microphone to you. Okay, we'll start over here with Nate.
Nate Ryan, NBC Sports. Todd, the 48 said their plan all along was to play for 12th after the second segment. Did you guys give any thought to that? And if you decide against it, why did it not make sense?
We did. I mean, obviously this race, since the rules came out, there's been a lot of strategy thoughts put into it. We talked about, the fact that if there's 20 cars in a lead lap and you bail back to 11th or 12th, that starting on the front row with 15-lap old tires and having four rows of cars that separate you from tires, I think in 13 laps you're probably pretty safe. I really felt like, as we looked through it, that there might be an accident or there'd be cars laps down, and that as that number of cars that stayed there diminished, that, I mean, we love to play offense. That's Joey's awesome on offense. And if you watch us through the year, we at two-tire racetracks, we take four tires a lot of times just because that lets him be aggressive with it. He's an aggressive driver. So I saw an opportunity that you could win the race that way, but the way that suits our style was to race forward. And we kind of we worked our way on the 50-50 fence through the week, and by the time we got to today, it was let's get four tires and let's go race forward, and that's what we chased to today. For the guy that was staying on tires, I think there's a lot of things that play into that, and I got asked that by a couple of MRN guys before the race, but I think it's got to be a fluid decision because you don't know how many cautions we're going to have after the 85. You could pit at 85, put four on, and then have a caution that eats up 8 or 9 laps of what's left. And now the guy that's starting up front's only got 5 or 6 laps on his tires. I 5 or 6 laps, I'll take that versus stickers with two rows. But you don't know what that's going to be. But as the race kind of worked on, you saw that the lap down cars were there. So I felt like if you started 5th or 6th on 4 versus old tires, you're probably in a good position. If you've got to start 9th or 10th, it's probably a harder road to hoe.
And Stephen, I want to apologize. We didn't get to hear all that interview. We didn't get to Joe Logano in the media center at Charlotte. We'll listen to that later. Excuse me. Let's bring on our guest here at the bottom of our crew chief. For the number 16, BK, I mean, not number 16, for number 83, BK Racing Toyota, for Matt Benedetto, hopeful lawyers and Cosmo Motors, and the NASCAR Camp Force Trucks is Mr. Gene.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Gene, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. Well, I mean, we actually felt like we had a pretty good car in happy hour, and
obviously Matt did a great job of driving it. We got, you know, we kind of got lucky a couple times in restarting on the outside, but you know, so it was track position. We had a little bit newer tires than some people. Some people had the same tires as us, but all in all, it's just, you know, we kind of hit it right for the day, and Matt did an awesome job, and we ended up sixth.
Yeah, and also Matt, not Matt, I'm looking at everything, Gene. With everything that went down at the All-Star race this past weekend, with the new format and everything, do you think it was really too much? Do you think NASCAR added too much in there to, I mean, it was just too much to comprehend, or do you think it was an okay deal there?
I think, you know, at the end of the day, that wasn't a very good format. You know, I don't, obviously, I don't, it might not even be a bad format. It's just poorly executed. You know, there's, I think there's a lot of scenarios that come up that NASCAR really hadn't thought of or just didn't have an answer for, and it kind of put them in a, painted them in a little box with some people that, you know, I know we had actually asked, Patrick Donahue and myself had actually asked what they would do about, you know, wave around cars, you know, lucky dog cars. And, you know, they said you would, everybody would get a chance to wave around or whatever, and it wasn't the case. So, I mean, really, I think the unfortunate part is somebody didn't just say, hold the bus, let's put some of these cars, you know, give these cars a lap back. The deal that happened to Matt Kenseth, I felt that was totally wrong as well. So, I mean, you know, but again, I think it was a moving target. It was hard to make decisions on the fly. Everybody knows that. And there was just a lot of scenarios that weren't thought through.
Don't want to say it, Gene. That's fine with me. But, you know, back when
we were definitely hitting four, sometimes three. I think, you know, it really escalated out of control pretty rapidly. So, you know, inevitably the right decision is to hit five lug nuts. It doesn't matter how you look at it. Like, okay, it might make a stop a little quicker, but really you have a driver that's risking his life to run around there on a loose wheel. So the end result can't be good.
Exactly. And, exactly.
It was only going to escalate. You know what I mean? Next thing you know, we're trying to figure out how to hit two. So it was a dumb idea to begin with. I've never understood why they said, you know, it was a year ago or whatever it was, 2 years ago even. No, I guess it was a year ago. But they, you know, when they said, hey, we don't care if the lugs are tight or whatever, you know, just so the wheel doesn't fall off. I thought that was pretty ridiculous at that point. But, you know, I don't know. I can't really answer why somebody started out, you know, why NASCAR started out in that direction, down that path, other than, you know, truthfully, they're just, you know, they're trying to do it with cameras. You can't really sit there and say, oh, there's a lug. I mean, by the same token, I've been bitten before coming down pit road, and they thought a lug nut fell off, and it didn't. We actually had to stop on the green, put a lug nut on. We didn't have a lug nut off, and that's, it actually cost us a win years ago at Las Vegas. So, I mean, I've been on both sides of that. So, I still feel like you got to have five lug nuts tight.
Yeah. And, Gene, my final question before we hand you over to Steve. Coming up on the Coke 600 this weekend, it's the longest race on our schedule. How do you go about getting your pit crew and everybody in the shape and hydrated and everything from?
Yeah, it's always a long one, but, you know, truthfully, it's a night race. It's not as hot as it could be. I mean, I've been in Indianapolis for the Pickup 400 and started the race at 104 degrees, so I feel like, you know, it's a little bit different. Yeah, it's a very long race, and the driver's got to stay hydrated. He's the one that you really got to worry about. Pit crew guys, I mean, it's really not that hot as a night race, and everybody should be ready to go. And they're, you know, pit crew guys nowadays are just athletes, so they know to hydrate, they know to do all that stuff. It's the driver that forgets to drink stuff, you know what I mean? So you really got to stay on top of the driver to keep drinking fluid and maybe get him some bags of ice, you know, just every now and then a bag of ice down the fire chute will keep your chest cool, and that really helps a lot. And, you know, hopefully the air conditioner works all night, all that stuff. So we don't really do a whole bunch different. You know, you just kind of just make sure your driver hydrates himself.
Yeah. And, Gene, I want to thank you again for taking time out to come on our show. And good luck to everybody at BK Racing. Guido, Reagan, everybody, and you. Y'all have a good weekend and safe weekend. I'm going to hand you over to Steve and Gene. Thank you very much, bud.
All right. Thank you.
Gene, appreciate you coming on tonight. You know, this weekend at the Cook 600, obviously this is a long race. It starts in the day, it ends in the night, and we've seen races sometimes. Last year it ran just past 4 hours, but we've seen these races push into the five-hour mark. You just talked a little bit about what the driver has to do and what, you know, the pit crews and everybody has to do. But, you know, when it comes to the mechanical sides of this car, this is the longest race that you guys have to ride in, you know, that you have to compete in all year long. From the mechanical side of things, not only between qualifying practice and everything else, what do you do different to the cars, to prep these cars and get them ready for that extra 100 miles of racing that you would not normally do for anywhere else on the series schedule?
Truthfully, it's not as much as you would think anymore. You know, I think everybody notices at the racetrack, or, you know, during these races, there's very little attrition anymore. I mean, seldom do motors blow up. They do blow up, don't get me wrong, but, you know, there's the parts and stuff, the brakes, the gears, transmission, all that stuff has elevated so much in the last 10 years that, and even the motors, you know, like you used to have a lot of valve spring problems and stuff like that, and still will. Every now and then there's a bad batch. But the only thing that we really would do different is obviously we'll work on, you know, there's going to be a temperature change from starting in the evening and running at night. We end up having to put more tape on. From a balance standpoint, the car normally frees up a little bit as the sun goes down. So there, you know, you got to work on that part of it. The only thing different we will do is limit the number of laps or miles we put on the motor prior to the race. So, you know, it's a 600-mile race, and we'll limit the amount of miles on the motor prior to that to 100. So all of practice, qualifying, all that stuff, you know, we basically can only run 100 laps. It's 100 miles, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know what you meant. You know, also with the Coke 600 also this weekend, you know, you guys also have to compete against the Indy 500, and this year with it being the 100th running, there's just so much that goes around this. And I know a lot of people in the motorsports community also, you know, will typically not only – you know, surround themselves with watching the Indy 500, but then switch over and then watch the Coke 600. Yeah, from being in the sport for so long and being around it, from your perspective and just being in the garage, and what is it really just about this weekend or just the 100th running of the Indy 500 and what you guys do at night, and what is the crossover appeal sometimes you think on a weekend like this? That sometimes that the Indy people that would watch the Indy race and then switch over to the Coke 600 or vice versa?
Well, first of all, and first and foremost, for me, it's my favorite day of racing every year. So, you know, for me, I'll get up in the morning and watch the Monaco Grand Prix, and I'll watch the pre-race stuff for the Indy race, and then I'll drive to the racetrack. Watch what I can on the big screen while we're getting ready to race, and then run the Coke 600. So for me, it's my favorite day in racing. I mean, it just always has been. Which, you know, obviously I love racing and live sleet. You know, that's all I've ever done. So for me, it's a great day, and I'm sure it is for a lot of people. I think, you know, truthfully, I think there's a large number of people that like both Indy cars and Formula One cars and just in general like racing. So I think it's a great day for motorsports in general, and I think a lot of people get a lot of choices, a lot of options to watch whatever race they want, and I'm sure hopefully they tune in and watch ours.
This season, and this is not going to be my final question. I'm going to throw you off just a little bit on this because it's not really about, you know, the Coke 600 or anything else. You know, this season, obviously, NASCAR, you know, we tested last year at Kentucky and Arlington. We took a lot of downforce off of these cars. We've changed several different things coming into this season. You know, a lot of the engineering has gone back into the car, and there's been some reports that many teams out there across the board have gotten somewhere around 250 to 300 pounds of downforce back of the 800 or so that was taken away this year. Going forward, and not just speaking to, you know, what has been taken away from the cars, is this good that we've seen this downforce being taken away from the cars, and have we seen better racing produced as a product of this? And should NASCAR continue to take the downforce away from the cars so that we see them slip and slide and possibly have more passing around the track like we did in the All-Star race, which was a byproduct of more downforce being taken away from the cars?
Yeah, you know, I'm on the fence on that a little bit. I feel like low downforces, it produces a better race. And I think the racing this year is absolutely – and again, I've been doing this for 23 years working on NASCAR stock cars or trucks or nationwide cars. I think the racing is as good right now as I've ever seen, you know, like on a daily basis, week in and week out. I mean, many people don't think back to the early 90s or, you know, late 80s. I mean, there would be 2-3 cars on lead lap, and that's not the case anymore. And there would be an attrition rate of, you know, 25% of them falling out back then. Now, sometimes there's no cars that fall out. And, you know, the cars are slip sliding around. I mean, to me, Richmond is one of the best races I've ever seen in my life. They were running 3-4 wide the whole racetrack, you know, all the way around the racetrack. I haven't seen a race at Richmond like that ever in my life. So I feel like racing is the best it's been in a long time. Now, as far as removing more downforce, I don't really know because, you know, obviously BK is a relatively small team. We have a great group of guys. We literally have, like, if you compare us to Joe Gibbs or Hendrick, you know, we literally have less people there than they have engineers on their teams. You know, so from that standpoint, like, I wish they would leave the rules a little bit stagnant at times, because at the end of the day, every time they make a rule change, it costs more money. Every rule change they've ever made in the history of rule changes, you have to get a checkbook out to do it. So that's not always good for small teams. You know, like every time they make a small change, and you don't really realize it. Just the silliest things, like, you know, the downforce change. Well, there's teams that have 60, 70 wind tunnel dates because the manufacturers support them. You know, so far I think we've had 4. We will never catch up. We can never catch up to those people ever. You know what I mean? With the amount of wind tunnel time and all that stuff. So every time you make a change, it separates the haves and have-nots. So I'm not, you know, as long as I've been doing this, every rule change you have to get a checkbook out and pay for it. Well, at the end of the day right now, sponsorship's really hard to find in anything, for any sport. And we obviously struggle finding sponsorship. Well, making the bill more expensive or the tab more expensive to do this is just not the right thing to do with the economy the way it is. The small teams, it just kills them every time they make a rule change.
And my final question, I'm going to kind of go along with those same lines yet again, is that, you know, a lot of teams over the last couple of years have figured out this whole brake duct and situation that not necessarily are even cooling or doing anything of any nature to cool anything within the compartment, it's more or less used to suck the car back down to the track. And, you know, as you know, the closer you can get it to the track and the ride height rules that are in place these days, you know, the better aerodynamics that these cars will run. You know, some teams have already been lobbying NASCAR to let's just do away with this. Let's just make sure that we're not, you know, using these brake ducts any longer or these air ducts any longer to create a vacuum within the compartments, the engine compartments, to suck the cars back down to the track. What are your thoughts on this as far as teams lobbying for this or, you know, teams that have been doing this in general?
Well, again, it's back to the same thing. You know, we're a relatively small team. We have all the blowers, and we probably spent $15,000 on blowers, truthfully. We have them sitting there. So now that was a rule that was it's the same exact thing I'm saying. We probably have $15,000-$20,000 worth of hot, you know, high-volume air fans. And we've already spent the money on them. So has everybody else in this sport. At this point, you could limit it to one per wheel, whatever you do with it, that's fine. But you've already spent the money. They should have never had them to begin with, is the problem. Like, NASCAR is very proactive all the time. Or, you know, they're reactive, I should say. They're never proactive. In other words, when the first car showed up with them $1,500 fans, they should have said, "Nah, you can't run them." But instead, they'll wait till everybody's already spent the money and say, "Oh, you can't run them." So it's just $15,000-$20,000 worth of stuff sitting on your shelf. I don't necessarily disagree with not having them. That's fine. But everybody's already gotten there. Everybody's already done it. What bothers me is they weren't proactive in the fact of letting people do it to begin with. So everybody had to do it to catch up. That happens pretty much, you know, across the board. Like, somebody will show up with something different or whatever, and they'll say, okay, that's not against the rule. Well, number one, you know, this sport wasn't built on equality. I will say that. But the problem is, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever it was, whenever they built this generation body 4 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, it was going to be a stock panel, stock pieces, stock tier, you know what I mean? And next thing you know, there's nothing stock about the pieces that are on the cars. And you can walk down pit road and look at them, and none of them are the same, okay? Everybody's already figured out how to take them, you know, cut the body panels apart, put them back together, make it look like nobody did it. And then they're all different shapes. If they were proactive, they'd have stopped that 2 years ago, but they just let it go. And now it's out of hand. Now they're trying to rein it back in a little bit of time, and you never will. You can't put toothpaste back in a tooth. So I guess what I'm saying in the end is I feel like they need to be a little more proactive in their rulemaking and less reactive, not make people spend all the money in between. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand. And to go along with this, when do they go away from the steel bodies to what ARCA and what the K&N has gone to and just go to a composite body and make everybody buy it from one supplier?
Well, I feel like that would probably be one of the best things for our sport, but you know, if it's a spec body, you put it in the car and you go race. I don't really see, you know, fiberglass bodies as a good alternative, truthfully. It just takes too long, cleanup crashes and all that stuff. I mean, carbon fiber would be just as bad. So, I mean, I guess there could be a change, obviously, sooner than later, more likely. I just think, again, it's they didn't enforce the rules they had. They let people slide. They, you know what I mean? And now they got to what they got. The bodies are just – it's not necessary to go spend more money. It's just – it was necessary to enforce the rules to begin with.
Well, Gene, I appreciate you taking the time to come on here. It's been a really interesting conversation to talk a little bit about the mechanics of these cars and just everything involved. And not just necessarily just the race weekend, which is sometimes what we get into. And it's been a real interesting conversation. I appreciate you taking the time to come on here. Good luck this weekend at the Coca-Cola 600 and the rest of the season with BK Racing and Matt Benedetto. I will give you the last word. And I know you don't have any sponsors. Normally we give the drivers a chance to thank their sponsors, but we'll let everybody, if you want to let everybody know how you can follow you on social media or thank anybody there at the team. And like I said, I appreciate you taking the time to come on tonight.
Yeah, just I hope everybody just keeps up with BKRacing.com. And we're always happy to have new fans and have people support us and back our drivers, you know, David Reagan and Matt DiBenedetto, and just keep pulling for the little guys, I guess.
All right. Much appreciated. Thanks again, Gene.
All right. Thank you.
That was Gene. Gene Lee there with BK Rice and the crew chief for Matt DiBenedetto. He mentioned, you know, you asked him a really good question about the air ducts. And he mentioned it was like a waste of money. I mean, you know, he said it was like $15,000-$20,000 just sitting there.
Yeah, you know, and to go back to the question at hand, and just to explain this out, what this question really refers to is that here in the last several weeks or so, it's really come to the forefront and attention that a lot of the teams, with what they're doing is, and what they figured out, and they figured this out a long time ago, is that the brake ducts and the high flow fans that they use within the engine compartments, they have re-engineered them to not all of them are being used to cool down the rotors and the brakes within the engine compartments. What they are being re-engineered for is to create a vacuum within the engine compartment to suck the car down closer to the track. And as you know, the closer to the track you get, the less airflow underneath the car, creating less drag, better aerodynamics, etc. And teams have now began to lobby to NASCAR and to the officials to let's just get rid of this, because we're spending all of this money, as Gene just said, we're spending $15,000 and we have this stuff sitting on shelves and we're putting this stuff into the cars, and really the only thing that it does is that, you know, it creates, you know, a vacuum within the engine compartment, sucks the car down, creates a better aerodynamic package within the rules, because it's allowed within the rules. So, you know, that's a lot of money just to create a vacuum for just, you know, to pick up a little bit of aerodynamics, create a little bit of downforce within the front end of the car to, you know, circumvent, or I don't know if circumvent is really the right word to gain back. Yeah, I don't think circumvent is really the right word for that. But, you know, it's really, you know, teams are looking for a way to get that downforce back and create more aerodynamics into these cars. And that kind of goes again to one of my questions where in the last, you know, few weeks or so, there's been reports about 250 to 300 pounds of the 800 pounds that NASCAR took away from these cars had been regained by engineers on these teams. And this is one of the things that teams are lobbying for, which is surprising, to get rid of. And that's a lot of money that they're spending just on this one item.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And I had seen the question about this lug nut thing. You know, we've been talking about it for, I don't know, what, 3-4?
Yeah, and that really was the unfortunate matter. You know, it was estimated that you were gaining about 1/10 of a second for every love that you didn't have to hit. If the teams weren't having to hit, five logs, on the front, five logs on the back, that's a whole, nearly whole second that teams were picking up cumulatively. So, as you said, the 13-second pit stops were now dropping into the low 12s, high 11s. That's a danger to everybody. And a lot of times we were seeing issues with tires. We saw Keselowski at Atlanta have issues with his tires. We saw Jimmy Johnson with issues at his tires at Atlanta. We saw them the very next week at Las Vegas. We've seen it time and time again where good quality cars had the opportunity to get good, decent quality finishes only to be set back because the team only hit two or three lugs and, the Goodyear engineers would come over and find that the tire, had issues because the lugs had spun themselves out.
And so we're coming up on the 57th minute, the Gulf Coast 600 Motor Speedway. We've got 40.
So again, I didn't catch the last part of it. You faded out on me a little bit there.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I got you.
Okay, yeah, we're coming up on the 57th run of the Coke 600 at Charlotte. We've got 40 cars entered. It's 40 cars. We went from 43 last year down to a 40-car field this time with the charter system. So everybody's going to start all the way down to Cohlia. Your thoughts on what we have to look forward to this weekend in Charlotte?
It's going to be a long race. And like I said, last year it topped out just a little over 4 hours. We've seen this go up to 5 hours, just depending on, just slightly less than 5 hours in the past. So, it's a long race for a lot of these drivers that is going to have to endure for this extra 100 miles, longest race, longest night in NASCAR throughout the season. If we take a look back at last weekend, we've got a lot of good drivers that I think are going to compete very well. You look at the rookies, Chase Elliott and Ryan Blaney, both of them put on spectacular shows throughout the showdown. Both brought home relatively clean and good finishes, both in the showdown and what Elliott was able to bring home in the All-Star race later in that night. I think Ralph Fenway with Trevor Bayne and with Greg Biffle. Greg Biffle finished second last year. I think, he has an opportunity to come home and do some, be able to get a good finish. He finished first in the second segment there. He won that. And I think he has a lot of potential. Ralph Fenway has a lot of potential there, but you got to watch out for the Gibbs guys. And Edwards won last year. Hamlin has won the All-Star race there in the past. So it's hard to say, and you can't count out Jimmy Johnson. He for a long time was the king of Charlotte Motor Speedway. So, there's a lot of potential drivers in that field over 600 miles that could potentially come out at the end of Sunday night with a win.
And Stephen, what would be your power pick as far as your fans recently? And by all the listeners out there, that's just like we keep talking, it's a long race. Who would be your power pick as far as fans recently driving?
It's hard to tell. I think we've got a very good field of drivers out there. There's 40 drivers out there, but, really when you look at this whole field of drivers, I really look to the fact of, Ralph Fenway needs to pull some good stuff out. They did good job there in the showdown with Trevor Bayne and with Greg Biffle, but I think they need to capitalize on what they did. They need to turn their season around. They really need to turn around 2015 and kind of just add to it. I think there's a, you know, I think Ryan Blaney, with what he showed he could do in the showdown, he was able to get out there. He was able to get up and battle with Chase Elliott. He was able to run all pretty much the entire time in the top five before he got a penalty there on the restart, which put him to the back. He was able to drive all the way from the back. He was all the way up into the top three there at the finish. And I think, you know, he has that opportunity to be able to put on a decent finish, if not compete for that win. So, you know, there's a lot of dark horses in this field right now. And I think with qualifying Thursday night, I think we'll be able to see who some of these potential drivers are that are going to, you know, show us who has what it takes and who doesn't.
We have two rookies with Chase Elliott and Blaney. Miami. You know, we could very possibly have a rookie through Saturday, and I think on Sunday it's going to go over to the Fox. But we've got a lot of great coverage, and Steve, I want to thank you very much, and you can follow us, Steve. We're Steve, and I'll let you let everybody know what you're following on social media for the coverage of the Coach 600. You got to follow.
Barely got you. You're breaking up on me.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. But let everybody know what we're going to follow you on social media. You're coming to 600 this weekend.
You follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, Facebook.com/Speedway Digest and SpeedwayDigest.com. We'll have everything up there all weekend long. We're even going to cover the Indy 500 this weekend. Normally we don't cover Indy. But with the 100th running of the Indianapolis 500, we're going to keep you updated on that too.
Steven, thank you very much. Tell AM and the boys.